The Alamo is a tremendous tourist draw here in San Antonio. 175 years ago, at least 179 men died there for the cause of Texan independence. But in some ways, the battle over the Alamo continues. For example, the Daughters of the Texas Revolution, the caretakers of the Alamo, are debating their future role after the Texas legislature just voted to assign a state agency as the steward of the site. And the Alamo has always meant different things in different communities, 175 years after the battle. Joining us here in the studios of Texas Public Radio is John Philip Santos. He's born and grew up in San Antonio, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Neil. Thank you for the invitation.
And you once wrote that the Alamo stands as an example of how immigration policy can go very, very wrong.
Well, exactly. It's a unique monument that in a sense reminds us that in the middle of an American city in the Southwest, the preoccupied territories of the Southwest, that we have this legacy that goes back, rooting our world here in San Antonio, both in the epic of the conquest of Mexico and the epic of the U.S. Republic. So we have a monument that isn't just a commemoration of one battle. It's a very complex site that reminds America of its complex origins and our cultural destiny to remember the the full nuance of that history. And the way that the Alamo has been governed and managed since the turn of the 20th century has really established it as a kind of nationalist shrine, a victory, a defeat, an ultimate triumph of the Texas Revolution, a secessionist movement, a movement that was, among other things, pro-slavery. And yet many of those aspects of that history are elided out of the way that tourists experience the Alamo. So the Alamo right now, with all of these changes that are underway with the Texas legislation, we're at a moment where we could, in a sense, reestablish a new kind of commemoration, a much more complex, a much more nuanced, a much more deep and thoroughgoing understanding of the meaning of that monument to our history, not only as Americans, but as people of the New World, because that's sort of the prophetic element of what the Alamo represents. There's an incredible site in Tlatelolco in Mexico City. I'll just end with this.
Okay.
In Tlatelolco, which was the site of the final battle of the conquest of Mexico, there's an incredible plaque there written by a Mexican philosopher who says that, yes, this was the site of the conquest, the final battle of the conquest, and yet we also must see it neither as a victory nor a defeat, but as a place of a new birth, the birth of a new people. And that's what the Alamo represents. So I'm hopeful that even though this legislation is largely about the stewardship of the structures, literally the management of the buildings, that we can begin to establish a new way of using the Alamo as a place for people of all rows, of all origins, of all cultures, to come and reflect on the complexity of immigration, the complexity of meetings between strangers, often violent in the past of Texas, and yet this is really the challenge before us, is how we establish a new kind of understanding of the legacy that the Alamo represents.
What was the celebration this year of the anniversary like, 175 years on?
Well, it was largely pro forma in that it rehearsed many of the details of the historical moment. And yet, it was the newspaper here did a kind of you are there coverage as if it were being covered in situ, sort of the traditional CBS you are there approach, time traveling coverage of the everyday developments of the battle.
Colonel Travis today drew a line in the sand.
Right, but yeah. We didn't get the full story of what the Alamo really represented. It by the time the Battle of the Alamo took place, the city was already 100 years old and was already complexly related to the history of encounters between the indigenous world and the Europeans, between Anglo and Mexicano. And all of that is embedded in the bedrock of the Alamo now. And it's our challenge to, in a sense, get into that story and deconstruct it and to allow a broader understanding. There's still a secessionist spirit in Texas. Rick Perry, our governor, just a year and a half ago talked about Texas seceding. And yet, if his name was Ricardo Perez, Chicano governor of Texas, a call for secession would be heard in a very different way. It was very blithely, somewhat celebrated and covered in the national media.
A few people wondered how it had worked out the last time.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's also true. Yeah.
We're talking with John Philip Santos, who's a scholar in Mestizo Cultural Studies at the University of Texas here in San Antonio. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. It's interesting. You've also described San Antonio as a secret Mexican city.
Well, you know, that's part of this complex story, that these lands that stretch from Brownsville to Northern California were part of this legacy of the earliest development of the settlement of New Spain. And we are a part of both nations, in a sense, in these borderlands, in these frontera worlds. And we have legacies that run deep into Mexico and into Iberia and Europe. And then we have legacies that run deep into the American history, too. And San Antonio has never been a place of tremendous conflict in terms of violence in the civil rights era or the movement of Chicano power. This has always been a place that has sought themes of reconciliation. And yet the Alamo represents, in a sense, this unresolved story, the story that still has lingering questions about the legacies of North and South between the U.S. and Mexico, and one that developed within 30 years into Texas becoming a Confederate state.
Mm-hmm. There's also that simple story that we hear so often, the John Wayne story, the Fess Parker story. That's going to be difficult to break out of people's consciousnesses, especially when there is that, you mentioned the secessionist spirit. Well, hard to know how seriously to take that, but nevertheless, that is not just an American shrine, that's a Texas shrine.
Well, yes, it's true, but this is also a place that has had a long Mexican-American majority, and that demographic shift is now taking place across Texas. It's become one of these crazy oxymoron terms, a majority-minority state. We remain a minority, but we are a majority-minority. And yet, we have yet to fully encompass the cultural and historical challenges that really are about the transformation that's underway, how we will imagine and re-embrace and share our understanding of the past, our mestizo past, with the rest of the nation. Because this is an American story. The mestizo story is a story of Thomas Jefferson. It's a story of George Washington. We have a mestizo history that has been hidden.
Let's see if we get a caller in on the line. Sheila joins us on the line from Colorado.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, my family and I just went to the Alamo on spring break this year, and we were interested to see how slavery and the issue of white plantation owners coming into Texas with slaves would be portrayed, and the issue of Mexico outlawing slavery. And not a word about slavery was mentioned at the exhibit, and I was really surprised that the complexity of slavery was not introduced at all in the exhibit.
These are uncomfortable questions, and they're the questions precisely that we are challenged to confront now. Unfortunately, identity politics has become a kind of anathematized term, but identity politics is what the nation's next 100 years is about. How do we become a new kind of nation? A república cosmica, the cosmic republic, a republic of all nations.
And it's interesting, though, and Sheila, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. Historians have, over the past few years, many years, begun to acknowledge, yes, it turns out there were Hispanics on both sides. There were Latinos on both sides in that battle.
As there are today, there are Latino Tea Party members as well. So the polity of Latino identity is a very complex and variegated one. It's not uniform by any means. Our challenge, though, is how to deepen our understanding of these monuments, these shrines. There are others. You know, the one that always irked me in New York City was the shrine to Teddy Roosevelt in front of the Museum of Natural History, where he's riding on a horse, on one side a naked African slave, and the other a Native American chief carrying his gun. You know, and that monument stands in the middle of New York City as a kind of racial supremacist.
I don't think it was a slave. It was from Africa. It was one of his bearers on one of his expeditions.
Probably, yes. That's right. Generous. Yeah.
It's interesting to read in your personal history that the Alamo meant something very different to you when you were growing up.
That's right. Well, I first encountered the Alamo as a place where my father and mother would take me and my brothers to hear Bongo Joe, a street griot playing oil drums every night, literally in front of the facade of the Alamo. So I thought of the Alamo as a very lovely place where we could go and hear this incredible street musician, poet, chanticleer of San Antonio. It was only later that I learned the fractious history that was behind the walls that we saw every evening on San Antonio nights.
Well, we'll
here's Bongo Joe.
We'll go out today with
lovely.
The words of the music of Bongo Joe, recorded many years ago here in San Antonio. But John Philip Santos, thank you very much for your time today. John Philip Santos, a scholar in Mestizo Studies at the University of Texas, San Antonio. Today's program was produced by April Failing. The senior producer is Carlene Watson. Thanks to our guests, our hosts here at Texas Public Radio, Fabian Gonzalez, who gave us engineering help, Wayne Coble, director of News Talk Programming, and Janet Grogene, the director of Corporate Relations and Community Outreach. Tomorrow, Science Friday. Ira Flader will be here with a look at the connection between literature and medicine, plus building a map of the local universe. We'll be back in Washington on Monday. Have a nice weekend. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.